It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Mike Pompeo, Mike Pence. What does the Republican field look like for 2024? A conversation with Kelly Ann Conway. It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? Happy holiday week. Happy Thanksgiving. As always, I hope you will download, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment. Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. Leave it a 5-star review, share it with your friends, leave me a comment. I'm telling you, it's hard for me. It's very, very hard for me to celebrate victory. I feel like Hulk in the Avengers. We thought this was going to be an epic showdown between the Minnesota Vikings and the Dallas Cowboys. We thought this was Will Cain versus Pete Hegseth. But like the Incredible Hulk in the Avengers taking on some random orc enemy, the Cowboys picked up the Minnesota Vikings and slammed their body all around the football field. I mean, it was absolute destruction and domination. It wasn't just victory. It was almost embarrassing. 40-3. I think it's the biggest road victory for the Dallas Cowboys since like the 1970s. It's one of the biggest blowouts in the NFL. It is the biggest blowout in the NFL of the season. The next closest was the Buffalo Bills against the Pittsburgh Steelers, 38-3. But that's the Bills against the Steelers. This was an 8-1 Vikings team against a 6-3 Cowboys team. And they destroyed the Vikings. Dak was damn near perfect. Micah was an absolute game wrecker. Kirk was primetime Kirk, but God bless him, he was sacked 7 times. What are you going to do? That Cowboys team right there, the one we just saw, that team, that is, as I have said, a Super Bowl contender. Man, the texts and the videos were flying during the game. I'd record a video, send it to Pete. Like, I was watching. How about Brett Maher, field goal kicker, kicking a 60-yarder, and then the NFL doing something that I've never seen before? Because this came from the NFL. This came from New York. Stopped. Reviewed the previous catch from CeeDee Lamb to find out if it was a catch, thus waving off the field goal, which I didn't think you could do that after a play had taken place. I didn't hear a whistle. But I guess you can if it's the Cowboys and if it's the NFL. Didn't they confirm, oh, it was a catch. Oh, cool. So you just ice the kicker, NFL? And then Maher lines up and drills a second 60-yarder. Sent that video to Hegseth. He sent me moping videos with his kids. I sent him celebratory videos with my kids. The trash talk was taking place over the cell phone. That is a net positive of modern technology. Some of it, by the way, I posted. You can check it out on my Instagram or my Twitter. Sweet, sweet victory. Sad, sad defeat for Pete Hegseth. The bet will be paid off on Fox and Friends weekend. He'll be wearing his Dak Prescott jersey in the coming weeks. Make sure you check that out on Fox and Friends weekend. Alternatively, disappointment for the U.S. men's national team. We got you ready for the World Cup with a big breakdown with Alexi Lawless. The United States dominated Wales. Possession, all in the U.S.'s favor. By the way, during the game, I had this beautiful, I think it would be like a golden eagle. And people said it was a red-tailed hawk. Way too big to be a red-tailed hawk. Land in my backyard. He actually swooped down and grabbed a squirrel. Competition for Violet. In fact, she was going bananas in the house. I don't know if she was rooting him on or she was upset that he was on her turf, but he had a squirrel. And I thought it was an omen. Screaming Eagle, Walmart t-shirt, USA, here we go. And United States dominated Wales, but a bad, bad penalty by center back Walker Zimmerman put Gareth Bale on the penalty kick line, and he scored for a tie. Now, this is bad. You got to be top two to emerge from the group. And England looks awesome. England, Wales, U.S., and Iran are our group. So that means we're tied with Wales, who everyone expects it to either be the U.S. or Wales come out of the group, right? Well, now with the tie, I don't know what we can look at. Assuming it goes according to form, everyone loses to England, everyone beats Iran, then we're going to go down to goal differential. So we got to play England tight and smoke Iran. I'm pretty sure that's how it works. Disappointing, disappointing for the U.S. Disappointing result because they played really well. Terrible by Zimmerman, but they honestly should have scored more the way that they dominated that game. Anyway, go USA. It's awesome here on Thanksgiving week. I'm getting to spend a little more time with my boys. They're out of school. We watched World Cup games together. We worked out together. We went to breakfast. We never get to because I'm in New York every weekend. We went to the original Pancake House. Loaded up for a lazy like 9:30 a.m. breakfast. Just awesome week with my favorite holiday of the year. No gifts, no presents, no pressure. Just family, just friends, just football. I can't wait. It starts Wednesday night in my household. Well, I'll go out, have us some Denny Ritas. For those that know, you know. And then it's just, what, 14 hours of football. And we play Mafia and talk and laugh and bust each other's, well. Anyway, I love me some Thanksgiving right there with 4th of July. Top two holidays of the year. Go America. Today, my conversation is with Kellyanne Conway. If anyone knows about presidential politics, American politics, it's Kellyanne Conway. In each answer, Kellyanne will give you a history lesson from 1970 through 2006. But I did my best. I always enjoy talking to Kellyanne. To push her, I think she enjoys being challenged. To push her at times, we talked about Trump. We talked about our estimation of where the public sits today with Donald Trump. We talked about Ron DeSantis and what the public still doesn't know or doesn't feel importantly when it comes to Ron DeSantis. We even talked about Nikki Haley, Mike Pompeo, and Mike Pence. It's on. It's on. Donald Trump is in the race. Who else will soon join? The primary for the Republican nominee for the President of the United States in 2024. Here's our conversation about 2024 with Kellyanne Conway. Kellyanne Conway, I'm so glad to have you back here again on the Will Cain podcast. And while last time we talked about your life, your career, your views on America, now I want to get your views on the future of America. I'd love to talk to you about 2024. And I think we have to start with the only man who has announced he'll be running for president in 2024, and that's Donald Trump. How do you see the prospects for Trump this time?
Sure. Well, Will, I think that Donald Trump is still the prohibitive favorite just because he did this before. People across this country are saying that they're fearful, they're frustrated, whether it's rising costs, rising crime, lack of physical security in our communities, lack of national security, so much chaos and crisis around the globe. And I think many parents are still very upset about education with the lost learning and declining test scores almost 3 years into COVID. So that said, they want the policies, if not the man, back that made us more safe and more prosperous. So when they compare Donald Trump's America to Joe Biden's America, of stripping away everything else and just given a binary choice on those two things, it's not even a fair fight. It's a very clear choice and not a referendum. Folks are saying, get me back to those $2.50 gasoline prices. Get me back to groceries I could afford for Thanksgiving and elsewise. Get me back to Putin not in Ukraine and 4 million people not coming over the southern border and rising crime. So capricious and arbitrary everywhere we look. So that's very clear. There, of course, there are other people who are considering running for president on the Republican side. It's a free country. They should do that if they want. It's a very hard thing to do, I promise you. Winning elections is very hard. I think the worst thing for Republicans right now, Will, and I've told everybody from Donald Trump to Mike Pompeo to Mike Pence to anybody who will listen to me about this. I told it to the RJC convention this weekend, Republican Jewish Coalition out in Las Vegas, where lots of these Republican 2024 hopefuls I was the lunch speaker, and I said very clearly to hundreds of people in the audience, if we don't get it together on how to attract ballots and not just voters, we'll continue to lose elections. People are begging. The Democrats are unified on two things, Will Cain. They're unified on dividing the country, and they're unified on how to get ballots banked early. And they do that with such aplomb and such alacrity and such competence that we see them have these tremendous advantages in places like the Pennsylvania Senate race and the Nevada and the Arizona Senate and governor's races, particularly in Arizona. So we need to get it together with the process, start investing in the non-sexy parts of politics, which includes voter outreach, certainly, but also ballot access and banking those ballots early. Now, for the rest of the field, we've got a lot of great young governors. We have governors who are wildly successful, who just got reelected by huge margins, especially those who didn't lock down their states, like Governor Abbott or Governor Noem, Governor Reynolds, Governor Lee in Tennessee, and those who just locked down for a brief amount of time, as was the case in Florida and a couple of other places. But Ron DeSantis had a monster night 2 weeks ago in his reelection, really upped the totals among so many key demographic groups. And I'll just give you a quick statistic. In 2016, Donald Trump lost Miami-Dade by 30 points. 2 years later, Ron DeSantis lost Miami-Dade by 20 points. 2 years after that, Donald Trump lost Miami-Dade by 7 points. And 2 years after that, just 2 weeks ago, Ron DeSantis won Miami-Dade by 11 points. That's a 41-point shift in 6 years. And it's durable, and it's consequential, and it's lasting. It's not a sugar high. Last point. There's one guy I think for sure will be on the ballot, and he does not deserve to be president of the United States. His name is Joe Biden. And if the Democrats really wanted to kick him out and replace him with someone younger, they could turn to their 50-something-year-old female vice president of color, Kamala Harris. Except they can't turn to her, because no one, including, if not especially those who work with her and who are the leaders in the White House and the Democratic Party, have confidence in the competence of Kamala Harris. So I think one of the biggest results for November 8th, 2022, is that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris think they should run again. And that's delicious for those of us who know how to beat them.
Okay. A lot I want to follow up on what you just had to say. I will pick up on the last thing you noted, though. You said there is one man that is sure to be on the ballot in 2024, and that is Joe Biden. Are you sure? Will Joe Biden be on the ballot in 2024?
Well, who knows? But he just turned 80. Happy 80th birthday, octogenarian, every minute of 80, Joe Biden. God bless you. And the Democrats want to pluck him, but I think that became more difficult after the election results. Number one. Number two, it's really hard to dislodge a sitting president, Will. It happens very rarely. So two quick examples when it was almost done. One is 1980. Jimmy Carter had a very serious primary challenge by sitting Senator Democrat Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts. Now, Kennedy went on to win 12 states, including large states like New York and California. And he did not concede the nomination to President Jimmy Carter until the convention that year, August of 1980. And by then, Carter, in addition to the malaise and obviously the hostage crisis in Iran and just so much going wrong, energy and economic crisis probably sounds familiar to folks. In addition to that, he had been bloodied and bruised within his own party by Ted Kennedy. And of course, Ronald Reagan goes on to beat Jimmy Carter. Thank God. Now, 12 years after that, George Herbert Walker Bush is the incumbent president. And a guy named Pat Buchanan, a TV commentator and columnist, challenges him from the right, particularly in the state of New Hampshire in that primary. Now, Buchanan doesn't really win any big votes to speak of, but he ushers in, opens the door for one Ross Perot to run as a third-party independent. Ross Perot got 19% of the popular vote that year. His best state was Maine at 30%. Worst state was Mississippi at 9%, by the way, for the trivia buffs. But he doesn't win any electoral votes. Yet he prevents George Herbert Walker Bush and Bill Clinton from being 50% plus candidates representing the major parties, Republican and Democrat, respectively. And Bill Clinton gets elected with far less than 50% of the vote, about 45-46% of the vote, and becomes a two-term president. So I can see that happening again. It's very hard to dislodge and pluck out a sitting president, particularly one who is being told by the people around him, you're doing a great job. It's not clear to me anybody tells him how unpopular he is, how unwelcome he was in the campaign trail, and frankly, how deeply and widely independents disapprove of the job he's done on every major issue you can think of. So I think the going bet is if he had a stronger vice president, particularly a female minority vice president who's in her 50s and could do the job even remotely well, they would be able to step aside. If I were a Democratic strategist, I would say to Joe Biden, if I were close to him like Ricchetti or Klain or Jill Biden, I would say, look, Joe, you finally got the brass ring. You got rid of Donald Trump. Thank you very much. You ran for president 1,000 times over your career. You finally did it. And drum roll, please. You were this year as FDR with all the spending, but now you go down in history as the guy who helped to elevate and indeed helped elect the first female president of the United States, Kamala Harris. They can't do that. Everybody sees her. She can't even string a sentence together. She's got State Department minders with her on Air Force Two. I guarantee you. I worked in the White House for 4 years. She's got people giving her briefing books. I guarantee you. And yet she just won't do what yours and mine children do when they're in pre-K, which is memorize mommy and daddy's names, mommy's cell phone number, their address, and the Pledge of Allegiance. She doesn't seem to be able to memorize anything that would even make us feel remotely comfortable when she's there representing us abroad. Not happening for her. Not easy to dislodge him from the presidency.
I can't imagine Joe Biden winning, much less running for president at the age of 82. But I want to return.
How is it different from 78? He got elected at 78. All these people will respectfully
because
say,
I think he's
got to go. He's old now.
No, I think he is visibly declining, even over the last 2 years, in a way that I think would turn off independents. So I just think there would have to be a recognition among his handlers and the electorate to say, we cannot do this once again. But look, the power of incumbency is strong. I recognize exactly what you're saying. And so that's a big gravitational pull that you would have to break. But I just have to think, look, how about this, Kellyanne? Let me ask it to you in this hypothetical. If it is Donald Trump as the Republican nominee, then I could see them convincing themselves that they could once again beat him with Joe Biden. They would say to themselves, we did it once, we did it, we can do it again. If it's somebody besides Donald Trump, now I think you're going to have a Democratic Party say, I don't know that we could beat Ron DeSantis with Joe Biden. We need to somehow make a path for Gavin Newsom. Do you agree? Do you disagree with what I just had to say? I could see them signing up for Trump versus Biden part two. I just can't imagine them running Biden out there for a brand new, fresh fight against a younger opponent.
Could be, but it depends what the electorate really means when it says, I want revolution and new things and change. Americans have a love affair with change. They have a love affair with youth. And they just elected the decidedly non-smiley 60-something, 30-year incumbent Patty Murray over the truly Tiffany Smiley, you know, pleasant, young, forward-looking, amazing American story with her husband and those three teenage boys. People like to say that. They love term limits, yet they keep on electing their incumbents again and again. And by the way, the elections this year, Will, were pretty darn good for incumbents, particularly in the Senate. And to a lesser extent, but very strongly, Democrat and Republican at the governor's level, particularly in some of these swing states. So what I think Joe Biden would run on is experience and the fact that he's already there and he invested in so many things and these things take time. So I know people love to project forward on both sides that so-and-so would do a great job, but you don't know that until they're actually under the Klieg lights. We've heard this before. Respectfully, donors don't choose the nominees, voters do. Pundits don't, media don't, pollsters don't, the people do. And there are a lot more people than there are us. So we'll see what they have to say. I'm not willing to rob them of their choice and their voice so early on. I'm not a big fan of the word electability because I think it's he can win, he can't win. It's meant to suck the lifeblood out of a lot of great conservative candidates who have less funding and lower name ID many times. Now, when it comes to Joe Biden, then let me make two quick points also. One is it's not his age so much as his policies that disqualifies him from being able to be president for a second term. I think he's beclowned himself and embarrassed this country, humiliated us many times internationally and domestically. And his policies, President Biden is in such conflict with Senator Biden that he has spent trillions of dollars on things we don't need and didn't ask for specifically. He embarrassed us in Afghanistan, a disgrace to ignore the counsel of his generals and leave $85 billion worth of intelligence and equipment within the wingspan of China. What's the point of having a female vice president of the United States, quote unquote, if the women of Afghan are less free because she and her boss, Joe Biden, are there? That's number one. Number two, Gavin Newsom, what is his argument? I'm young and good looking. He's going to, what is he going to say about California that the rest of the country would absolutely want him to export to the rest of us? The homelessness, the crime, the out of control taxes, the traffic, the wokeness. We're seeing a real backlash against that now. So we'll see. But I don't know if it's just generally. The other thing about governors, I'll say, they have great records as chief executives, but they do lack the foreign policy, national security bona fides and gravitas. And I have seen that get in the way of governors right, left and center when they're trying to make the case as to how they should be the commander in chief. They could do that. There's doesn't mean you can't overcome it, but they don't have as much runway to say that as, say, a Joe Biden, who will say it, even though I think it's false that he's risen the respect for us around the globe. He'll say, listen, I was chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee for 11 years. He was. I was vice president for 8 years. He was. I've been president for 4 years. He is. So I don't think it's that easy for folks to do that. Look, I was out at the RJC. I sat right in the front row. I was steps away from Nikki Haley when she spoke, and Ron DeSantis. They both spoke on Saturday night. They gave great speeches. They would make much better presidents than Joe Biden any day of the week. Neither one of them said Donald Trump's name. They both have plenty to be grateful for to Donald Trump and the America First agenda. We're all part of the same team. My main message to Republicans right now is you got to unify. And you cannot allow people who would never vote Republican and would eat you two eyeballs like grapes if you gave them the opportunity to divide us. We need to be unified.
What does that mean?
Unified means to stop talking about each other in ways that are barnyard slurs more than differences of policy. So I believe
that
there will be more. I think many people have done that. I don't like Ron DeSanctimonious from President Trump any more than I like Chris Christie and Larry Hogan and Kristen Noem, three governors I like and I admire their work. And two of them are friends of mine at the very least. I don't like them going after the president personally. All this stuff about President Trump is to blame for the losses. Ron DeSantis campaigned for Carrie Lake and Tim Michaels and Derek Schmidt and Mastriano and Oz in Pennsylvania and Adam Laksa. It would be ridiculous to blame Ron DeSantis for the losses. It would be ridiculous to blame Vice President Mike Pence for Baldock's loss in New Hampshire, although the day after Baldock became the nominee, Mike Pence went to New Hampshire and campaigned for him. A unified Republican Party that doesn't want Maggie Hassan or Gretchen Whitmer anymore or Catherine Cortez Masto or Mark Kelly. The responsible thing to do is to go and campaign for those Republican candidates. So that's what I mean by unified. Will, I guarantee you, whoever the Republican nominee is, they will be running on the America First agenda. I promise you, just like every candidate this time did.
Well, you know, I hear people say we need to unify, and I don't think that everybody means the same thing when they say we need to unify. And that's why I pressed you to find out exactly what that means, because the truth is if we have entered, and I think that if we're all being objective and looking at reality, we recognize that we have entered essentially now the primary season of 2024. Only President Trump has announced, but as you just mentioned, you were at the RJC this weekend, Nikki Haley, Ron DeSantis, Mike Pompeo, Mike Pence are all on the edge at some points here of announcing that they could run in 2024. And therefore, I think asking people to unify is maybe you could be asking for politeness. Let's set aside personal attacks. But I think that the only true way that we're going to see unification is if everybody clears the field and endorses Donald Trump for president, because he is clearly running. And if he runs, it will be big boy pants politics. He will do what he did after the midterms, which is he went after Ron DeSantis. So I don't really know if everybody means the same thing when they say unification, because I think the only way that we can accomplish it is if everybody clears the field for Donald Trump. And I'm not saying that's what I think should happen, but I think it's the only way we could envision unification.
Right. Well, I don't think Donald Trump hasn't told people to clear the field as far as I know. He expects a fight. He expects competition. First of all, the Republican Party and the conservative movement will, if we're for nothing, we're for freedom and personal liberty and competition. And I have been a critic, a very vocal, invisible critic for years of the lack of competition in these field clearing exercises, particularly on behalf of establishment candidates to squelch out conservative candidates back in the day when we would end up with John McCain as the nominee or Mitt Romney as the nominee. And I respect both of those men as public servants, but they both lost. and it wasn't close. They both lost, and in large part because conservatives were demoralized and because we don't have enough competition. So clearing the field is never what I mean by unity. What I mean is, for every time you want to attack Donald Trump as a Republican or as a Republican would-be aspirant for the presidential aspirant, how many times have you attacked Joe Biden? How many times have you called out Chuck Schumer? And how many times have you called out Nancy Pelosi? How many times have you called out a Democratic Party, all of which voted in lockstep against Amy Coney Barrett, who was eminently qualified to be in the Supreme Court, and in favor of the Inflation Reduction Act, which did no such thing as reduce inflation? That's what I mean by unity. You're never going to get an argument from me about squelching competition, freedom, and personal liberty. Well, I've spent decades saying that. So, sure, but if people want to run, I got to tell you, Will, it's harder than it looks.
Oh,
been there,
you.
Done that.
I believe
it's very
you.
Very hard.
I definitely do. And I do want to ask you in particular about a few
and
of these
candidates. And I think the 2020 campaign proved that. I'm very critical of Donald Trump's 2020 campaign in my book that you and I talked about. But people should go back and read that and go read the afterword. It's meant to be directional for all of us, how to move forward and win again. That's what I want to do. I want to win.
We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
Okay, and I do want to talk about some of those candidates in the time that we have together specifically, but I want to stay on some of these things that you're talking about. So from what I hear from you, when you say that you would like to see unity, what you mean by that is all of them, by the way, are going to criticize Joe Biden once they announce they're running for president, and they already have. They're all going to criticize Joe Biden. You'd like to see fewer personal attacks amongst the Republicans running for office. That's what I've gathered from what you've offered us here. And I agree. These are all, I don't disagree with anything you're saying. In fact, I just want to clarify. So let me ask you another point of clarification I hear from people. What does it mean if someone is establishment? I mean, I think we all have this sort of like abstraction in our head of establishment, but I just noticed that all of a sudden now, for example, Ron DeSantis is being called establishment. I'm trying to figure out when and how that became the case. So what does it mean to be establishment?
Well, I haven't heard him that way. Maybe people mean some of his donors or supporters. I'm not really sure. I don't think that's fair to Ron DeSantis. If anything, when they say we want Trump accomplishments without Trump, and you look across the field, and a lot of these folks try to be in the mold of Donald Trump. Don't back down, be a fighter for the people, be the party of the worker, you know, stick it right back to woke corporations who are trying to get you to do things that you don't want to do. Don't get drunk with power with these executive. Don't get drunk with these executive powers that they all had during COVID. I mean, that would be much more establishment, I think, and left wing. Frankly, I don't consider Ron DeSantis establishment. I think I'm thrilled that he's the governor of Florida, and if he wants to be a two-term governor of Florida, the best two-term governor of Florida has ever seen, and basically walk into the presidency in 2028, he can do that too, and only be 48 years old. But he has to decide. They're all going to have to decide, but I think some of them have time to decide. And with President Trump out there, I have never heard him say, and he called me this morning, I've never heard him say, I think this is mine and I'm not going to have competition. He's Donald Trump. He's had competition his whole life. He's also been a guy who has defied the odds and shut down the critics and the naysayers many, many times in politics, in real estate, in business, on television. It does feel a little bit differently now. But I think if he wants to focus, and just so you know, I'm a straight shooter here. I'm not allied with any campaign. And so I'm speaking to you as a fellow Fox News contributor on your podcast and as a political strategist. And frankly, as the person who won who managed the last winning Republican presidential campaign. Well, he's never thought that there wouldn't be competition. But I will tell you that until you get onto that debate stage, until you go starting mixing up with the people, until you put your neck out there, your name on a ballot, and you schedule your first rally or your first editorial board meeting, you have no idea what you're in for. And the political graveyards are littered with very fine men and women who were supposed to be the next president of the United States or the next nominee who couldn't get past one of those early states.
No doubt.
This is tough business. It doesn't mean it's guaranteed to anybody. And just so we're clear, I think Republicans should all have to earn the vote. Finish your sentences, make the case, close the deal, earn the vote. Ladies and gentlemen, Your vote is your voice and your choice. It is the most equalizing factor you have in our constitutional republic. And I think people have to earn it from you. I truly do.
No doubt. Look, Rudy Giuliani, Rick Perry, there were a lot of people who were anointed as the next president of the United States or their next Republican nominee for president of the United States. And I'm with you. You have no idea what you're going to look like or how you'll survive the spotlight and the debate stage. Hey, you said something in the middle there, though, that I heard. You were talking about Donald Trump and you said this time it's different, though. What did you mean? What's different this time?
So I don't think it's 2016 and I don't think it's 2020 for Donald Trump. It's maybe some combination thereof. Obviously, he's a former president who has a record of accomplishments, that many Americans, Will Cain, say they really miss and that they'd love to get back. You know, so many Americans feel like they're drowning economically and otherwise, and they're looking for pockets of air. So Donald Trump can stand up and say, well, I can do it again. That's not a campaign promise. I'm the guy who did do it, so I can do it again. So that's 2020. 2016, I don't think you could ever recapture the magic of truly being an outsider who was counted down and counted out, understaffed, under-resourced, underestimated, underdog. And I don't think the Democrats, even though Trump derangement syndrome is real and there seems to be no vaccine or booster for it, I think even then they won't be fooled again by Donald Trump by not going to Wisconsin, not going to Michigan, not going to Pennsylvania, three states now where they have the governorships, where, you know, Hillary Clinton ignored those. So I believe that they've learned all of that. And also I was just telling the president this morning, frankly, I said, look, in Pennsylvania in 2016, I was on TV every day, mostly on Morning Joe, ironically saying, hey, Pennsylvania's our reach state. Meaning like they would just let me talk and talk. Pennsylvania's our reach state. It's 20 electoral votes. Election day is November 8th. We're going to go back there. We're going there with Trump and Pence today. 2 days later, I'm going with Melania Trump. The day after that, I'll be with back with Donald Trump. Why, Kellyanne? Isn't Pennsylvania fool's gold for Republicans? Isn't it the girl that got away? Yes. But Pennsylvania doesn't have early voting, I would say, Will. That's what I said in 2016. It has absentee voting. But just like New Hampshire, it has a rich tradition of day of voting. That is no longer true. They have weeks and weeks of early voting. 625,000 votes had been cast in the Fetterman-Oz Senate race before that debate between Fetterman and Oz. So it is not 2016. It is not 2020. It all feels differently. And I believe that those who are running around with their sugar high, phony, rosy polling they bought into this time, that needs to go, and not paying enough attention to ballots as well as voters, can't win without all that.
I hear you.
Need a robust effort for that.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt the Republicans need to be more sophisticated on how they collect ballots within the legal parameters. The Democrats have managed to push the or blown through, perhaps in some cases, the boundaries upon. But earlier you said, and we were talking about Donald Trump, you said that you believe, and it's a belief that I share, that America is ready to re-embrace the message, if not the man. And you also said, by the way, whoever it is that runs or gets the nomination for Republican president of the United States will inherit and will run on an agenda of America first. I agree with all of that, Kellyanne. Did the results of the midterms give you any hesitation about that certainty? Does it teach you anything about, I thought that everybody cared about inflation. I thought that everybody cared about anti-wokeism. I thought that everybody cared about crime. And of course, the rest of the pillars of America first. But it sure didn't turn out the way I thought it did or I thought I was going to in the midterms.
No, not substantively. And here's why. The Republicans ran on all of that. They ran on their commitment to America, a nation that is safe, an economy that is strong, a government that is accountable, and a future that is free. And they had all the bullets that you just mentioned, Will, and more. Mm-hmm. The Democrats had to roll out Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, and some others to wag their finger at America, scolding us, scaring us, saying very regrettable things, as did Jim Clyburn, that he invoked Nazism, Hitler, Stalin. The world's going to fall apart if you elect Republican. They need to live with themselves and their lack of strategy in these midterms to actually cross the finish line. And it was to scare. They did not address inflation or crime or energy or national security, border security, physical security, financial security. I think being the more honest party that looked at the polls that we all saw, including Democratic media polls for over a year, while telling everybody very clearly what was most on voters' minds. I think being the party that acted with responsiveness and integrity, clarity and specificity on these issues is a heck of a lot better long term. And it's how they won the House, particularly in deep blue districts, Oregon, New Jersey, California, Virginia, and right here in New York, five congressional districts. So I'd rather be us longer term. I thought that the midterms were more transitional for Republicans than transformative. And we all know as sports fans, well, about transitional years. And transitional in this case showed true gains, according to the Fox News voter analysis, among key demographic groups, plus 13 among suburban white women, plus 12 among African-American voters, plus 10 among Hispanic voters, plus 6 among Jewish voters. So those gains, to me, are more durable and lasting than if they were just some kind of cardiogram, you know, of an angioplasty patient who, you know, we're going to lose that the next time, we're going to lose those gains next time because they were time, place, and manner. So, no, I don't want to be them. I don't want to lie to the public. I don't want to deny rising costs and rising crime and have to roll out former presidents to wag their fingers. The guy who won on hope and change gave us none of that this time.
We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
Okay, here's what I want to do now, Kellyanne. I'm going to go through the names on the Republican side for 2024, and I'm going to share with you some of the feedback that I have gotten. Now, here's what's happened since the midterms for me, okay? And I think that people often often misinterpret attempts at analysis as endorsement. It's not. I haven't said what I want to happen, but I'm doing my best to find out where the American people are because I totally agree with something you said earlier. It's not my job to pick president of the United States. It's not your job. It's not the media's job. It's not the media titan's job. And it's not the establishment's job. It's the job of the people. And one of my jobs is to do my best to try to hear from people. And I really have. And I'm not, this isn't scientific, you know, this is anecdotal life stuff polling, right? So here's what I'm going to talk to you about each candidate one at a time. And I want you to tell me your response to what I've heard, if you think it's inaccurate or accurate. So here it is on Donald Trump. On Donald Trump, I have heard this a lot. And these are from people who are MAGA, meaning twice Trump voters, not never Trump, not anything else. They are concerned about continued electability. Can he win a general election? And they are concerned about style, not substance. You said embrace the message, if not the man, earlier. And I heard that. They are worried a little bit about the same tools or techniques, for example, that were ushered out, targeted at Ron DeSantis after the midterms, and whether or not everyone is tired of that. So those are the things that I've heard. And again, these are not people that hate Trump. These are people that actually love Trump. And these are the responses I get when I ask them about Donald Trump moving forward. That's what I've heard, not my endorsement. What's your thoughts?
So let me start with style. So style, if you don't like Donald Trump's style, don't marry him. Don't have him as your best friend. Don't be his neighbor. Don't invite him to dinner. But I think he also should hear a lot of the advice that people are giving him, which includes me, but a lot of those voters that when I say advice, just, you know, as a friend and a former counselor and a successful campaign manager, people like big Trump. They don't like small Trump. They like Trump when they say be more presidential. At this point, I think what they mean is not just tone and style, but they also mean accomplishment. So all of that wrapped together should be the same thing. I don't think you should have people who are encouraging him to post things on Truth Social that just are gratuitous insults, even though Donald Trump can expect to be the biggest recipient of gratuitous insults from inside his party and outside his party of anyone. So for some reason, Will, the only person who never gets a mulligan, it seems, a do-over, is the world's most famous golfer, Donald Trump. People excuse the conduct of this one, that one, and the other one. Never for him, I promise you.
World's most famous golfer, is that what you said?
Yeah. World's most famous golfer never gets a mulligan.
I'm sitting here, Tiger Trump.
No, you know
Tiger
what I mean.
Trump.
In politics. World's most famous golfer in politics that we're discussing today. You know what I mean. Secondly, you talked about electability. It's a word I absolutely despise, and here's why. It was used against Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Marco Rubio.
Against
and
them?
Donald Trump. Yes, you're not electable. Mm-hmm. David Dewhurst. People don't even remember these people's names. Lieutenant governor, self-funding guy of Texas, ran against Ted Cruz. he lost. David Dewhurst.
You're talking about
Mitch
for Senate
McConnell
in Texas.
Wanted his other. Yeah, Mitch McConnell wanted his other senator be a guy named Trey Grayson. But we got Rand Paul, Marco Rubio. I mean, people who run against the favored candidates, the voters see something else. So I think electability is a fiction in this way. Electability pretends I know if you will or will not win 2 years before an election. Nonsense. Lazy for all of us. The way you win the presidential race is not through electability. It's through electoral college. So we need to start focusing on those 10, 12 swing states that are going to decide the election. This was my advice to Donald Trump in 2016. It will be my advice to everybody in 2024. You win the presidency through the electoral college. If you're going to go waste your time, if your consultants foolishly tell you you can win Oregon, or a Democratic consultant tells Biden or Newsom or whoever, you can win Mississippi. No, you can't. So stop doing that. And so electability, also what happens with electability is people say, this one can absolutely win. They're electable. They have no proof of that other than a whole bunch of people saying they're electable. Let's go back to 2000. So we are told beginning in the summer of 1997. The summer of 1997 is closer to the 96 presidential election than it is 2000. We're told in the summer of 1997, go back and pull the press clips. George W. Bush, then the governor of Texas, is the only one who can win. He's going to be the next president. Okay. And we're told that for 2.5 years. He can win. He can win. He can win. He can win. He gets to New Hampshire, and John McCain beats him by 18 points. So everybody who said he's the only one who can win watches him lose in the first primary contest. Then he sort of juices it up, tells Rove and others, do what you got to do to win South Carolina, and he goes on to win the nomination. But for 2 years, we were told he can win, he can win, he can win.
Okay.
So it's a very dangerous word. It makes everybody lazy. And let me just say this. Ladies and gentlemen, stop believing folks who would never, ever vote Republican.
No, but no. But here's the thing, Kellyanne. You're mixing up. To be fair
now.
Because I'm telling you, I'm not telling you what pundits have said to me. I'm telling you what people have said to me.
I hear the same thing from the people. President Trump knows it. He hears it from
them. But I get what you're saying. Let the game play out. Don't try to predict the game.
Well, let me just say there were three donors just last week on the same day or same series of days. Ken Griffin, Steve Schwartzman, and Ron Lauder. All three wonderful men, captains of industry. Thank you so much for your contributions. Job creators. Great guys. All of whom have given money to President Trump before or supported him, voted for him, certainly. They all said, we're out next time. And two of them, Lauder and Schwartzman, I think President Trump would consider them friends. They certainly considered him a friend. So they said, we're out. So President Trump knows that it's out there. He knows that's out there. But I will tell you this. Somebody can win or can lose does not make it any more true than I can tell that we're all going to lose the last 10 pounds, clean out the junk drawer, or hit the Powerball.
Kellyanne, is that why those rich guys said they're out? Did they say they're out because they didn't think that Donald Trump could win in 2024?
I don't remember their specific things. I know Ken Griffin is for Ron DeSantis. He's made that very clear.
Right.
And I think they may say it's an electability thing or we need a new generation. We can go pull the press clips. But so my point is, not only have you heard it or I've heard it, Donald Trump is now hearing this.
I know. And I like what you said. The phrase that I like was people like big Trump, not small Trump. And I believe that's 100% true about which they like, which Trump. Ron DeSantis. I'm going to give you a little bit of anecdotal feedback that I've gotten. Again, not endorsement, not my opinion, in my attempt to solicit feedback. So this is a group of friends that I've had who have said, okay, this was their analysis and their theory, and I defer it to you now to give me your feedback. They said to me this, every president you can think of is someone that you would want to have a beer with. That was famously said about George W. Bush, but it is true as far back as you can probably go. Bill Clinton, even Obama, that people could say would have been an interesting guy to sit and talk with. Obviously, Donald Trump, you want to hear more. I was offered that Ron DeSantis, and this is not my opinion, I was offered that Ron DeSantis does not check that box, that there's a lot going for him. But in this estimation, again, anecdotal feedback. And I think you're right. Also, the other big thing about Ron DeSantis is let's see how you survive a debate stage. Let's see how you survive foreign policy tests. But what do you make of let's see how you survive us getting to see and know your personality and wanting to have that beer with the president. And again, the thing about that is, that doesn't mean it's a right way to pick our presidents.
Right.
It's just about human nature. Is it the way we, is it part of how we pick our president?
I actually stopped asking the who would you rather have a beer question with many years ago. I understand it's a good test. Trump doesn't drink, by the way. I think Biden doesn't either. But I don't know about the rest of them. But well, George W. Bush certainly doesn't. But
you'd still want to have a beer while hanging out with Donald Trump.
I used to have one. You know, who would you try? I used to have one. Who would you trust to watch your kids for a couple of hours on a Saturday? And I thought, oh, good God. I would. At the time, I had four kids under the age of five. I'm like, I would take any of them. Hillary, step right up. Elizabeth Warren, here we go. I'd take any of you with four kids under five on a Saturday. Come right this way. Here's my address. But seriously speaking, I do think connective tissue with the electorate is important. Whether your test is who would you have a beer with or somebody saying, I want somebody who's accessible and relatable. And the irony is, it's the billionaire real estate male from Manhattan who checked that box against Hillary Clinton, ironically. And, you know, that was a year, as every presidential year as well, where a majority of the voters are female, and yet we were able to beat the queen bee. And I will tell you right now, it's one question asked, do I like you? But the real question voters ask is, are you like me? That's the most important part. Are you like me? What is our connective tissue? So it doesn't matter if you're richer than me or a different gender or you come from Texas. I grew up in New Jersey. What matters is, what do we have in common? Do I think that you do feel my pain or that you relate to my life? Maybe we've both buried a grandparent that broke our heart. Maybe we're struggling with parenthood. Maybe we're really upset about a lack of health care coverage. Whatever it is, we'll find that. So I tell people all the time, you're the best ambassadors we have for the freedom message, because people will say, I like you, but more importantly, you're like me. I see you at the synagogue, the mosque, or the church. I see you on the kids' playground or at the senior center.
So how does Donald Trump check that? And like you said, ironically, the Manhattan billionaire checked that box. How did he do that?
He was always more comfortable with the hard hats down in the pit than he was with the financiers and the attorneys up in the 26th floor. It's just a fact. I know it. I sat in the Trump World condo board with one Michael Cohen and a few others, and I witnessed that firsthand. They felt that he was there for them. They felt that he was there, that he was there for the manufacturers and the construction workers and the coal miners and the fracking industry. So they felt like, here's a guy who said, Chinese eating our lunch and more. They're going to take us over. I'm going to make sure the jobs come back from China, come back from Mexico. What are these trade deals that leave America, American workers, American industries behind? So they thought that he would deliver, and he did, on many of those issues.
You know what else I think? His imperfections.
Yes.
I think people can identify with his imperfections.
Well, that's charming, by the way. It's connective tissue. It makes you a little bit more accessible and human.
Yes.
So my advice to Ron DeSantis would be, you know, maybe he didn't need to do it to be governor of Florida. My advice to him overall is, talk more about your childhood. I happen to know, just because I'm a political junkie, you've probably read about it. His mom, I believe, was a nurse. I hope I didn't get that wrong. His dad sold boxes for Nielsen. He grew up in a suburb of Tampa. He went to Yale on a baseball scholarship. Like, people want to know all that. They see the beautiful young wife, those gorgeous kids. She is his top confidant, obviously, in life and in politics. She survived breast cancer. God bless her. Thank you, God, for answering those prayers. But I think they want to know a little bit more. So when Nikki Haley says, look, I'm the first female minority Republican governor in the country. My parents came here from India to South Carolina. People don't know who we were, why we were there, what we were doing. They had $8 in their pockets. People want to hear that.
Do you think, Kellyanne, that is, as my friends suggest, a vulnerability for Ron DeSantis?
Well, I think he is much more charming and accessible than people give him credit for, because he has, I think, look, this is what I think. I think what one person sees as strong and resolute and as a fighter for the people and against woke corporations and against Fauci and lockdowns and against raising taxes and against teachers who won't go back into the classroom, even though we've made it easier for them to do so. I think what some people see as a fighter and resolute, other people see as obnoxious or obstinate or pugnacious.
Those people won't vote for him anyway. I just wonder if I think those people wouldn't vote for him.
Well, I always
say
that. That's what I say. And I think Ron DeSantis, like Donald Trump, is smart enough to know that. They're smart enough to know.
But I do think, Kellyanne, there's a concoction here. There's a needle that needs to be thread on what you're talking about, where you're strong and pugnacious and you're a fighter, but you also show some humanity that people can, as you said, connect to and think, you are like me in this way. And I am not sure that Ron DeSantis has accomplished that yet. Obviously, Donald Trump has accomplished that needle being threaded, that he's accomplished that concoction, that recipe of having both, being a fighter and being someone that against all odds, everybody says, oh, I see how he is like me. Okay, I'm going to do the last.
Can I say something about that? Republican Jewish Coalition this weekend, Ron DeSantis was the closing speaker, keynote speaker on Saturday night right after Nikki Haley. I was feet away from him. He did a great job. Afterwards, people gave him a standing ovation. The young people, the millennials, all rushed to take pictures of him. He shook hands for a while, but he never came out to the crowd. And he rarely does. I know he's capable of it, but most of the way we see him is through press conferences.
Right.
And so it's all. So, again, the question is, because this is the new way that we expect Joe Biden won't be back in the basement. He won't be able to hide from himself in 2024 the way he hid on the election trail, not just in 2020, Will, but 2022 when he was unwelcome. So he can't. Biden and Harris can't hide from Biden and Harris in 2024. And I say this because I would love for Ron DeSantis to step off that platform and start mixing it up instead of being up. And the reason I say that is people eventually have an expectation of that. And he even said to everybody, our great first lady, my wife, Casey DeSantis, is backstage. If I were advising, I would have said, bring her out. The crowd would have gone
wild. Yeah, it's still retail politics, right? It's still handshakes.
The crowd would have gone wild. We would love to see the beautiful, brilliant Casey DeSantis. So it's stuff like that. But I also, you know, you don't have to pay a consultant to tell you that. It's got to come naturally at some point.
Yeah.
And so whether he's running for president or not, she was there. We were there. We would love to have seen her.
Okay. Whether or not you'll say it, I think it sounds like you're saying my buddies do have a point when it comes to Ron DeSantis. Not a killer. I'm not saying this is a fatal blow, but it is something to watch.
I think
here.
It's and a problem for Newsom, though, and Buttigieg. I think it's a problem for a lot of them.
Of course, of course. But we're trying to figure out who's the next Republican nominee for president for now. And I'm trying to do this fairly about each of them. I'm asking about the pluses and the minuses of Trump. I'm asking about the pluses and the minuses of DeSantis. I'm trying to do our best to look into the future and see where, as you and I both agree, the people will lean. I'm going to ask you about the last three in a group, because I think my assessment is the same. Nikki Haley, Mike Pence, and Mike Pompeo. I think those are three that everyone anticipates will run for president. I simply don't see it. I don't see the path. But as you mentioned, let the game play out. I don't know how the game plays out. I don't know who's electable. But from now, from this distance, from what I've gathered so far, especially if those other two are in the race, DeSantis and Trump, I just don't. Maybe you can help me see the way. And you just heard them speak at the RJC. What is it for those three? Maybe it's individual. Maybe it's you could address them all in the same path. But what is the path for Pence, Pompeo, and Haley?
Well, if Trump is in the race, the path is tough. It's tougher. If he somehow is not in the race, if he decides he's not going to do this in the end, and although he's very committed, let's just say he doesn't run in the end. I think whoever he throws his support behind is probably has the best chance. I think that if I could just do it very quickly for each of them.
Sure.
The path for Nikki Haley is it's time. It's not just time for generational time, but a generational change, but it's time for something totally different. And the Republican Party, our electorate and our recruited candidates now do look a lot more like America, Will. You've read about it. You've seen it firsthand. The recruitment of more women, more candidates of color, more veterans, or some combination thereof. Anna Paulina Luna just won Pinellas County, a real swing county, boomerang county, as I call it. Went for Obama, Trump, Biden. She just won that congressional seat. She is all three of the above. She's a veteran, Hispanic, Latina woman, obviously. So I think Nikki Haley's argument is, look, I've been a governor. I know how to run a state. I've been a chief executive. I made some tough calls, like taking down the Confederate flag when many people in my party were upset with me. I know how to heal a state. I know how to hold the line on taxes. And then she could say, and I stuck up for the United States of America and against anti-Semitism and against Iran and China and the rest of them and Russia in the United Nations representing our country. So that's her argument. Pence's argument is very simple. Even though the path may be a little bit more complicated, the argument is simple. You want the Trump-Pence accomplishments without Trump? You're left with one name. why take a chance on any of these others? When I was there, I was the number two while all these great things that you love domestically and internationally were being accomplished.
So he's offering Trumpism without Pompeo, Trump.
Well, if people say you want the Trump-Pence accomplishment without Trump, there it is. Look, Mike Pence was famous for saying, when he was a talk show host 30 years ago, he was famous for saying, I'm Rush Limbaugh and decaf. You know, and he's also famous for saying, I'm a Christian, a conservative, a Republican in that order. He's also famous for saying, of course I'm a conservative, but I'm not in a bad mood about it. In other words, he wants to be the happy warrior.
Okay.
Pompeo's argument is, look, I was there when a lot of great things happened and a lot of bad things did not happen. I was there for the Abraham Accords, when Soleimani and Baghdadi were blown to smithereens. I was there when we were pushing back on Putin in Russia and China and holding Xi Jinping to account. I was there when we were making sure that Kim Jong-un at least was contained, that we were engaging him enough so that he understood it's different this time and none of that funny business. I was there for some of these trade deals, including for Japan, with Japan and Korea and USMCA, certainly Canada, Mexico, and China, enforceable, verifiable, specific, right before the COVID hit. He's also just got a great background. But see, I think you mentioned Haley, Pence, and Pompeo. All three of them also have connective tissue with the country. I talked a little bit about Haley's. Pompeo, top of his class at West Point, top of his class at Harvard Business School, or law school, rather, and a congressman from Kansas, the only living, the only American in U.S. history to be both the CIA director and Secretary of State. And, of course, Pence was a very
successful
governor of
Indiana. That's a good resume. I'm not sure that connects with America.
Congress. Well, but they'll have to explain all that. They'll have to explain all that. Look, where governors lack foreign policy bona fides or national security gravitas or records, those three individuals have them. And I think people like Ron DeSantis can say other stuff like, hey, just look at Florida's success.
Right.
Nothing really finishes a sentence quite like winning and quite like being successful. But I think that this whole conversation, Will, about Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Mike Pompeo, Mike Pence, and the list goes on and on. We have such a deep and wide bench. We truly do. I think the only reason they really get all a flutter about Gavin Newsom is they're so desperate to get rid of Biden.
Because he's the only one.
Andrew Cuomo's no longer there. Beto O'Rourke, Stacey Abrams. They just don't have these. I mean, it's so bad. They're talking about Gretchen Whitmer and Roy Cooper of North Carolina. Stop it, everybody. That's how bad their bench is. Their bench is
no doubt.
It's empty. It's silly. Ours is just teeming with a great team.
Yeah. We'll end on that note of optimism because we could add other names. I think there is rumors about Tim Scott, perhaps even Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin. But you're absolutely right. The only reason that the name Gavin Newsom is uttered because there is absolutely no other place to go after Joe Biden but to reach for Gavin Newsom. It's a fun conversation. You know, it's going to be an exciting 2 years. I think that it's a lot to ask, as you did at the beginning, for everyone to unify at this early stage, even in your own definition of what it means to unify.
Unify does not mean clear the field. It means
even by your
Joe
own
Biden,
definition of
radical
play nice.
Democrats and unify on tactics and unify on tactics. I don't care if they insult each other. Are you kidding me? I'm Kellyanne Conway. I can absorb an insult or two.
But you said you don't want the name
saying,
calling.
Will Keane, well, no, I want them to disagree on policy if they do. But I also want them to look, there's a big sugar high and there's a lot of political currency to be gained by some who would otherwise not have any or very little in attacking Donald Trump, whether you're on the left or the right or in the center. And so doing that may feel good at the moment, but it really does nothing to make sure Joe Biden is not elected in the future. Yet the Democrats are unified on two big things. They proved it. They're unified on dividing this country and dividing the Republican Party, and they're unified on tactics. And we need to start being unified in return, certainly on tactics, this early voting stuff, balloting, spending money on all the non-sexy parts of politics, folks, and be unified also just on laser focus on how to get rid of Joe Biden. And people are out there who can never get the nomination saying, well, it can't be Donald Trump. He can't get the nomination. They don't know that. He's still the prohibitive favorite. He's got way beyond a base, Will Cain. He's got people. 74 million is not a base. It's a very large swath of America. And by the by, here's another fact to lay out there, folks. Fact is not a four-letter word. Fact is a fact. Fact. 74 million plus Americans who were not at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. That was a terrible day in U.S. history. I'll never change my opinion on it. But the left tries to make every Trump-Pence voter having been there on, that's just ridiculous. And the other thing is, if Trump continues to talk less about the 2020 election and more about a forward-looking vision that solves problems and clearly shows a delineation between him and Joe Biden, you know, Donald Trump's not the only one out there who says I a lot. I hear it from many of them. I want to hear a little bit more we. These cannot be conventional political campaigns. They must be movements that make voters feel that they are included, that they are a part of it, that they've got skin in the game, that you're talking to them and about them. I doesn't work. People are suffering. They're hurting. They're worried. They're fearful. They're frustrated. And we just have to switch what we have for 2 years. I think there are a lot of wins from 2 weeks ago that aren't getting enough attention. Someone like Lee Zeldin, he won by losing. So he lost the governorship, but he helped carry those four congressional races on Long Island. Someone like Tiffany Smile out there gave Patty Murray the run for her life. I hope that I haven't seen a single Democrat, Will Cain, learn substantively and issue-wise what the electorate was saying here and how they're still economically suffering. If anything, let's end on this note. I'm the eternal optimist. I'm the happy warrior. I have a vested interest in beating Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. We need to do that. However, what was Joe Biden's one-word answer when asked the day after the election in a press conference, Mr. President, given what's happened, what would you do differently in the future? He said, nothing. Tells you all you need to know.
Well, I like how that when you address me throughout this interview, you don't just use one word. You reference me as Will Cain.
Well, my first name's so long, I figured. Bob's always
okay, Kellyanne
to say that
Conway,
about himself.
All right. I appreciate all this right. Note of optimism and this conversation today going over 2024. Thank you.
To be continued. Thanks, Will. Take care. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. There you go. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Kellyanne to set you up for 2024. I hope you enjoy this holiday, this Thanksgiving with your family. We all have a lot for which we can give thanks, which we need to give thanks. It's another reason this holiday is great. It's another time to learn the power of being grateful. I am, and I mean this not gratuitously, I am grateful for you. Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. I'll see you again next week.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow Podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.